Greetings, overthinkers. Corrigan Vaughn of the Topics of Great Importance podcast and Sean Thompson of the West Coast Bias cast here hitting you with a special episode where we give you all our unsolicited hot takes on the 2017 Emmy Awards ceremony. Woo! Sean, you sat and watched the whole thing, didn't you?
Yeah, this is so fun. I get to take off my sports hat and put on my pop culture TV hat, which, you know, I never get to talk about. So this will be fun.
Oh, how fun. I'm so excited to be a part of that opportunity with you. I don't have a sports hat, but I still think this is really exciting.
Yes.
So it's cool. I'm just going to straight out the gate ask you your highs and lows. Just before we get into anything super deep, what did you love at this Emmys and what did you hate?
Well, let's start with what I hated. I hated seeing Sean Spicer. I think that's the easiest hot, hot take, right?
Screw that guy, right?
For like, and I'm going to have a confession here, because for like the first like 5 seconds, it was so much shock that it was, yeah, there was a little bit of joy in it that I was like, this is hilarious. And I, right. Don't judge me too quickly.
No.
But then the rush of reality and everything that meant with that came back to it. At first, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so insane. And then I stopped and I'm like, but wait, I really don't like that person. And that guy sold his soul to the devil to be
totally whatever. No, I think I had like a similar reaction, if not necessarily like joy at seeing him, that it was so crazy. You know, mm-hmm. We're just, of course, this is what happens at the 2017 Emmys. We live in some sort of strange alternate Berenstain Bears universe. And yes, Sean Spicer is coming out, and what the holy hell is happening? And watching everyone else's reactions to it was what really got me. And Melissa McCarthy didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I think Melissa McCarthy's reaction was like my spirit animal reaction.
Yeah, no, straight up.
Just pure, utter disbelief of like, what is happening?
Yeah. Because she did not look happy, per se, about it. She looked like she was just like, oh my God. And almost, I mean, that has to be a strange feeling of responsibility for her, too, to be like, this is in front of me, him on this rolling podium that I created on SNL.
Right.
Here it is.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, that's what SNL has, they've had to have wrestled with.
Yeah.
With all of the flack that Jimmy Fallon has gotten, and now that Stephen Colbert is going to get because of this, is like towing that line between, you know, comical critique and satire versus elevating the platform and giving more voice. And yeah, it was so frustrating seeing him out there. And oh, it was just like, oh yeah, we hate this guy, but haha, he's in on the joke. So all is fine. Let's have a good time. Yeah.
It's such a fine line when you watch something like that, because I don't know, you see it and it is funny in a way to see someone acknowledge the thing they've been doing. It's just that then when you really think about it, you think of how sort of actively evil what he's been doing, what he was doing as press secretary was. And so it's a mix of shock and it being funny, but then also that sort of rage that brews up inside of you at seeing this kind of thing just like normalized in front of you. All the people taking pictures with him, I think, was probably what really, like,
for sure,
irked me.
And there's such a, I think the vibe that they were going for is like, oh, this is somebody that was like on reality TV that's like now coming back, and like they're making fun of themselves or they're getting in on the joke, you know, but this is somebody that was like part of a political, you know, atmosphere and environment that is still very much going on. So it's just, it felt really weird.
Yeah, I was saying to a friend yesterday, actually, I guess it was just after we watched it, but that I've, all these years as, you know, a professor of pop culture and all these kinds of things, been not utopian in my view of the role of social media and pop culture in the way it shapes society, but certainly to a degree, I've thought that people who were worried about it dumbing us all down and things like that were being alarmist, you know? And there's a part of me that has to look at stuff like this and be like, I was not alarmed enough,
you know, for sure,
that this kind of normalization that's happened in this reality TVing of politics and everything is something I had not seen coming and thought that we were better than. So, yeah, it was rough to see that part.
All right, let's talk about the goods.
Yeah, let's go to the good. What was wonderful to you?
I'm kind of tied. I did like that Nicole Kidman brought up the domestic abuse, mm-hmm. especially in light of Alex. What is his name? Alex Skarsgård.
Yeah,
didn't say anything about it.
Yeah, which was weird. I was waiting the soul speech. I was like, dude,
that was odd.
You gotta say something.
but my highlight was Sterling Brown winning because mm-hmm. I just love him as an actor. He's incredible on This Is Us, and I almost feel like it was almost like he was getting for two roles because he was so good in
absolutely.
OJ. In
well, did he OJ win season. For OJ last year? Because this is his second win, and I did remember his speech, but it may have been SAG Awards, and I'm confusing them.
I'm quickly not Googles.
Positive. Yeah, get to the Googles.
Oh, he did.
Okay.
So I feel like I just totally forgot about that. Okay, so anyways, he's totally reserving of both of those.
Yeah.
But it was so bittersweet because he got played off and he had such a good, amazing speech going.
After the, Nicole Kidman took so much
time. So long.
And then the next award they play him off on, you're like, oh.
Yeah. And we may be getting ahead of ourselves. It was funny that we're making a whole episode about diversity, but then we're going to let the white women have their platform about white powerful women roles, which is awesome. But when the black guy wants to talk about his platform, it's like, sorry, we're cutting it short because we have to wrap it up in 5 minutes.
But I will say on that note, though, as this being one of your highlights of it, I think for me, it was a highlight to see the way he kind of stood his ground on it, where he was play me off if you want, but I'm going to stand here and talk and make you do that.
Yeah, I'm going to make you commit to it.
Okay, bye.
Yeah. I'm going to make you commit to it, and you're going to have to do that slow, slow pan, and you're just going to have to hold and hold and hold and hold, and yes, we're all going to be a little uncomfortable, but also at the same time, mad respect.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I love him.
He's magical. Yeah, I'm a big Sterling K. Brown fan, and he's one of those guys who's been on the grind for years and is finally getting his comeuppance.
Total sidebar. I just learned that he's going to be in Black Panther. And I was already psyched out of my mind for that movie.
I didn't know he was in it either.
Yeah, see, I looked at the cat IMDb the other day, and because I was talking to my boss about it, who's that's his favorite superhero comic, super huge comic nerd.
Oh, that's awesome!
And I was like, wait a minute, Sterling K. Brown. What? This movie just got even so much better, and I
know
seen it.
Him. Can't be. No, he's. Oh my god, he's so great! I did not realize he's in that, but that cast is just full of people between the cast, the director, the writer, everything, it's Black Panther is just going to be everything.
Yeah. Well,
if it's not, I don't know. I end. That's it.
The world goes
if
on,
that
I
movie
guess.
Is not amazing, I just come out and melt into the ground, Alex Mack style. And that's how I end. But yeah, no, I agree. That was definitely a highlight for me. A low light for me is that David Harbour did not win his award from Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah. No awards for Stranger Things.
No awards for Stranger Things. We did not get to see. Did you see what those kids were wearing?
Yes. They looked like ballers.
I love them so much, Sean. They looked beyond.
So good.
They were. They're so cute, and they're just little adults. They're also beyond their years.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to see all of them up on stage, but especially David Harbour.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
Yeah. I have Kristen and I talk about this. Kristen, who is my co-host on Electric Fan Cave. We talk a lot about our inexplicable crush on David Harbour. Where you're just I can't
wrap your head around it.
Explain it per se, but I have a very deep crush on him, and I just want to see him all the time. And he took a picture with his potential speech, hanging out of his mouth on Instagram. And we were sharing it with, heart eyes emojis forever. We're just like, oh, my God.
I love that his character's name is Hopper.
Hopper.
I just can't. I just can't with it. It's like, hey, Hopper, Sheriff Hopper.
It's so good. Everything about it is perfect. Did you see It, by the way?
No, I know I should, but I can't. I haven't seen a real scary movie in probably like 5 years. And I was like super into them. And then
what happened?
I got married to a woman that doesn't like scary movies. And so I think that like really put the kibosh on it.
Salted your game a little bit there.
But I'm intrigued by it. And I kind of want to. It's one of those like, I don't want to, but I want to.
That's fair. Did you ever see the original?
No.
Wow. See, I mean, I grew up on the original. I rewatched it. My husband and I rewatched it last week. And then went and saw the new one as a result, which actually...
So is he in that?
Finn Wolfhard. His name does not sound like a real name. So every Finn time I Wolfhard? Say it, I'm like, that's not right.
That's not a real
That cannot
person.
Be an actual human. Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things is in it, and he's delightful in it. But all the kids in it are fantastic. And I highly recommend it. They're very different, the old one and the new one. I mean, not very different. They share similarities, but definitely worth watching. And all that to say, I'm a little bummed that Stranger Things went home empty-handed because that show was amazing. But I'm hopeful that this season,
yeah,
they're going to get the recognition that they deserve.
Westworld, too. No wins, which I thought was surprising.
That's true, huh? That is actually surprising. I'm not really a Westworld fan, but it's shocking in a sense. And it kind of speaks to the way TV is going now, because one of the things that we see in there, like Hulu winning awards, like mm-hmm. crazy and stuff like that, and then Netflix kind of getting shut out and stuff like HBO. Game of Thrones wasn't eligible this year, so there's that as well.
Yes. Which would have just made it madness, I feel like.
I don't know, maybe. That's another one. I read recaps of Game of Thrones. Do you watch Game of Thrones actively?
No, and I get so much crap about it. I've literally I feel like I'm going to confessional here on this podcast.
Right.
I've only watched the pilot of Game of Thrones.
So you've only seen just one?
Yes.
That's impressive, actually.
Yeah, you almost like can't be mad about it.
Yeah, right? Like there's a degree of fortitude in managing to only have watched one episode in, what, six seasons, seven yeah. seasons?
Sweet ignorance. Seven seasons, I think.
Jeez, that's bananas. Yeah. It's not my thing. I don't like fantasy. Not really my jam. But it's, you know, it would be interesting to see if it had been eligible what it would have done at the Emmys. But one of the things, I didn't actually give, like, a highlight. You know what my highlight was?
Yes, tell me.
Anne Dowd.
When oh my
Anne
gosh.
Dowd won.
Did you cry?
I like ugly cried. and here's the thing. So my friend Wes was in town. Good. Oh God. I'm glad to hear that. My friend Wes was in town and we had been binge watching The Leftovers for uh-huh. the weekend. And so she's obviously in that as Patty and is amazing. And I was like, he hasn't watched Handmaid's Tale yet. And I was like, you have to watch it because she's so incredible.
Sure. Yeah.
And when she won, it was just so genuine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
she was so shocked.
Yeah. And it's that thing, like Sterling K. Brown to a degree, too, where someone has been at it mm-hmm. for so long in their lives, and then they manage to get a couple of those really sweet roles at once, and they're recognized.
Yeah, for sure.
And you just felt... like, everything she was feeling in that moment. Just, like, I never thought... I'm going up against all these, like, brilliant ingenues and whatnot, and me, middle-aged working character actor, is getting this award. I, like, instant sobbed.
The funniest tweet that I saw about her was that someone said, I am only talking like Anne Dowd from now on.
When she says, thank you, Hulu.
Thank you, Hulu.
Hulu. I just love it so much. And it was like straight up. I was like, I had tweeted about it too. I was like, she sounds like all of my elementary school teachers. And I'm from Western Massachusetts. And
oh, nice.
She is from about 15 minutes from my hometown. I was like, oh, that's why. So there's like something really endearing about that too. It's like, you know, hearing your teacher win an award.
Yeah.
She was just so delightful. So,
Mrs. Dowd, she was the best.
So yeah, I love Mrs. Dowd. She really made history come alive.
Yeah,
She made dystopian future come alive.
Yeah. She was so such a complicated character.
So that was my highlight. But one of the things I think that, you know, we were both thinking about before coming into this is this idea of the diversity of this year's Emmys.
Not an old wooden ship.
What'd you say?
Not an old wooden ship. Anchorman reference.
Nice.
The well Emmys played. Were lacking an old Civil War ship.
That's good. TBT right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the diversity idea that was here, it's you can't deny that obviously this was amongst the most diverse Emmys ever.
Correct.
The most diverse Emmys ever. But there's so much of it for me, just to sort of start this out, that to pat themselves or ourselves or whoever we want to talk about with this on the back for diversity in 2017 for the things that we did feels really false. And just go through, just to like give an introduction, we had Donald Glover was the first Black director to win an Emmy for comedy direction. Lena Waithe, is that how you say her last name?
I believe so.
Okay. First Black woman to win an Emmy for comedy writing. Riz Ahmed. Oh, I love him so much. First man of Asian descent to win an acting prize. In 2017.
That's insane.
Sterling K. Brown, the first Black actor to win Best Lead Actor since 1998. Like, legitimately, some of my college students that I teach were not born the last time a Black actor won a lead actor. And Reed Morano, the first woman to win for directing in 22 years. So all of these things are awesome and cool, but isn't there like a part of you that's like, but also how is this new?
Yeah, how is this, how did this just come out of nowhere?
Right, like, you can't totally be proud of yourself for having the first man of Asian descent win an acting prize in 2017, right?
Yeah, I was like, I was so cynical about it when it was all happening, because it felt so much like people, CBS executives, like watched the Oscars and then like, and they're like, okay, like we don't want to do that. And then they also suddenly realized all of these crazy stats, and the pendulum just swung so hard. That it felt almost felt contrived, and it felt like self-congratulatory rather than just letting the work speak for itself and just letting it be an award show that people realize, like, oh, people of color actually do awesome stuff.
Right. Yeah. And it feels very, you know, it's a Trump's America award show, you know, it was and Stephen Colbert commented on this in it, like, you know, during when he was being critical of Trump or something in it. And he was like, how brave of me to say that in this room.
Yeah.
So there's a degree of recognizing that that's a thing. Like, this is not really a bold statement at this point, but it sucks to have something this diverse and also feel like it's a little bit tokenizing.
For sure. I mean, am I remembering, like, they had that, even that little, they even had to, like, talk about it.
Yeah.
Which felt really like, oh my gosh, this is so overstated.
Yeah, that was what really said. Because
look,
honestly,
how diverse we're being this year.
Right. Like, you can let all of this stuff, like, this is cool that this happened and we had all these amazing things. And then when you have to make it so obvious, as if we're not all watching this show.
Yeah.
And seeing it happen, just to be like, look at how great we are at diversity.
And all of us white people watching, like, yay, we are so brave. Yeah,
we've moved so far. We are post-racial.
Look how in touch Hollywood is.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So it was such a bittersweet thing to me to watch the whole thing, where you're like, this is so amazing. Because these people, I think, deserved these awards. But at the same time, there's this weird delegitimizing factor of the tokenizing of it, which will always be sort of the asterisk over this year's Emmys, you know?
Yeah.
There's always going to be that, like, this was the Trump Emmys.
Yeah.
That we had.
The only one we can hope for, hopefully. Yeah.
And this game, one of the things that I thought was so fascinating and was why I asked you to watch this beforehand was the Black Mirror episode that surprisingly ended up winning multiple Emmys. So it was called San Junipero. Mm-hmm. which was essentially about, I guess, you know, sort of a, what would you call it? It's not an alternate universe. It's sort of a technological universe, I guess, that they've created.
Yeah, it's like the one non-dystopian episode of Black Mirror.
Right. If you've ever watched Black Mirror, every single one of them ends horribly. And you're just like, we're all going to hell in a handbasket and probably because of our smartphones.
Yes.
And this one doesn't. What did you think when you watched that one?
Okay, so I haven't watched Black Mirror because I know what it's about.
Right.
I've had conversations with people that watch it, and they've told me, Sean, your anxiety would not be able to handle this kind of stuff.
Yeah. No,
because
for sure.
That kind of stuff messes with my mind, and I literally have panic attacks about it. So I'm like, I'm just going to stay away from Black Mirror.
Nah.
And then you're like, you need to watch this. And I was like, shoot, I do need to watch this. And then I like looked it up really quick online, and it's like the one happy episode of Black Mirror. And I was like, sweet, I can totally do this.
That was the thing. I hadn't finished this season of Black Mirror because – being a high anxiety person myself, I like kind of have to take them a little bit at a time. And so people kept telling me there's one episode that actually has like a good ending to it. And I was like, okay. But with it winning, I was like, okay, I need to actually watch this. So I did. And so what was your take when you, you know, watched that one?
Okay. So I want to choose my words carefully here because I don't want to say the wrong thing. The thing that I loved about it was that it was an episode about technology and belief and afterlife and like heartache and, you know, pain. And that was like the primary, at least for me watching it.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, and it happened to feature people of the LGBTQ community.
Right.
And some of the suffering that comes along with that. And I was reading a review online. It was like, it's so cool to see something like that, is now winning awards. That is not just this sad thing about like, you know, AIDS or like being shunned and out. You know what I mean? Like in those kind of like Philadelphia and Moonlight, which are super important films, but it was kind of just awesome to have like a gay couple that was like, oh, it's like a happy ending. And they, you know, like it would, like, I don't know if that sounds really
never
bad.
Happens. I mean, no, because it comes from, like, if you think about it, if you go back in basically American media history, you have this kind of thing with the idea of the tragic mulatto, right? Like, the mulatto is the mixed race character who can never have a happy ending. Their love story always has to end in someone dying or whatever. And that has transitioned into what the Tumblr crowd will call the bury your gaze trope, you know, you have like these gay characters and stuff, and it always has to end tragically for them. And so this actually manages to subvert that by being like, no, they actually get to kind of live with my scare quotes around it, happily ever after.
Yeah, and it just felt understated, which I think was what was so great about it, what I really enjoyed about it.
Yeah. Definitely. And the interesting thing about it, like, you don't watch Black Mirror regularly, but it's usually very clear what the conflict is going to be, where technology plays into it, and so forth. And the first 20 minutes of this episode, I was like, I don't totally get what's happening here. So it's the 80s?
So you didn't see it coming?
No. I was like, it's the 80s here.
Okay, I'm going to give myself a little pat on the back because I picked it up in like the first 10 minutes.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Nice.
And we won't give the spoiler away, but I was like, I looked at my wife because my wife watched it with me, and I looked at her and I was like, oh, I get it. I know what's going on.
Nice.
Because I know that the whole show is about technology. And so I was like, oh, yeah, I see what's happening here.
Yeah. I was like, there's got to be some sort of like parallel thing happening here. I just don't totally get what it is.
Yeah.
And so when it finally came around, I was like, oh, this is what we're doing with this episode. Well, to say, I think with this episode winning awards and things like that, you see it managed to both subvert the trope, the bury your gaze trope, and subvert what you expect of a show that is also very popular, too. And, you know, shows that sort of dystopian future that's, you know, seems to be happening based on our technology. So I don't know. There's something about that I think also may have impacted that, where we are in a period where we're seeing the negative things that technology have done for us, that social media has, you know, done for our society. And to have something like that that actually shows something a little more positive, I feel like that resonates.
Yeah, and I was reading up on the episode after I watched it. And what's his name? Booker? What's his first
Brooker, name? I think.
Something Booker. He was talking about basically that of like, yeah, I needed to do an episode where I actually talk about love and hope and like give people something to hold on to, and that it's okay every once in a while to hold on to hope. And I was like, there you go.
And also I thought it was really interesting. And I mean, the common theme is that I cry during everything, so take a grain of salt. But I was reading one interview with him and I was like totally tearing up reading it, because apparently this idea of nostalgia therapy is actually a thing.
Wow.
That is used with like Alzheimer's patients.
That's cool.
So, yeah. So he was actually taking this idea from real life to use to make his sort of technological future out of it. This thing that they're using to try to like reverse a little bit of the Alzheimer's problem. So I was like, that is super cool. Like, also then it just made me imagine like people who are struggling with Alzheimer's, like getting these beautiful things. I'm like, okay, technology's not there. Don't get crazy, Corey. But at the same time, I was like, that is a really rad concept.
Yeah. And that leads me to another point. I was going to say, so everyone's doing nostalgia right now, 'cause it's so hot. I remember really being used to nostalgia. It was my favorite Dimitri Martin joke. Is what I remember.
What was?
I used to really be into nostalgia.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
But everyone's doing right now, like,
It's
awesome to reminisce about the 80s and the 90s. And this episode obviously does that, but it was so understated as well. Like, this whole episode was, like, very understated in so many things. And it was just enough of the nostalgia to be like, oh, yeah, Alanis Morissette. I remember that. That was funny.
Right,
But it wasn't
Max
over the
Headroom,
top. It wasn't like oh, yeah, remember all these funny thing about the 80s? It was very subtle.
Yeah, which is nice. You know, it was, at first I was, like, a little worried it would be over the top with the Max Headroom and the, like, what was it? There was something else right in the opening that I was like, because Lost Boys was playing in the theater. And I was like, is this going to be like just a wink, wink, nudge, nudge 80s? But then I was like, oh, no, that's kind of a cool way of bringing this kind of together, setting the stage and everything. But without it being just constantly like, this is nostalgia and you people like this.
Yes.
Days.
Love this, millennials.
Yeah, right. You all wish it was a different decade. Like, capitalize off of that. Like, no, I thought it was really great. And so having finally watched it, and then, you know, when I watched the Emmys, I hadn't watched it. And I was like, what is this about? Why is this such a big deal? And now I'm like, I get it. I get why that was a big deal for people.
Yeah, it was and good, also, well acted, well directed.
Yeah. And it gives me a sense of, you know, those things. I always feel like with the Emmys, the voters don't watch the comedies. They watch the dramas.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, like that makes sense because that's probably one of the better of the dramas. But the comedy wins are always like dynasties. Like Modern Family won everything for like years.
Yep.
And now Veep wins everything.
Yep.
And you're like, I don't feel like the voters watch comedies. They're just kind of like, I've heard that's good.
Yeah. Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She was funny in Seinfeld.
By the way, did you know she's like a billionaire heiress?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's like full on, which is just, I can't wrap my head around that. Because she's
crazy.
Clearly worked to get where she is.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The
yeah.
idea that she just like could have been a Paris Hilton.
The whole comedy category is just, I mean, television has transcended the idea of one comedy category. So it seems weird that there's not like, you have SNL
it should be
next
sitcoms.
To sitcoms. Yeah, SNL next to like Transparent next to Big Bang Theory. You know, it's
right.
Like,
like these are not on the same playing field at all, honestly. And it means nothing to me if Brooklyn Nine-Nine isn't winning everything anyway. So BT Dubs, on that note too, during Sterling K. Brown's speech when he referred to Andre Brower as Mr. Brower and talked about like how much he had like inspired him, again,
tears. Just, Tears of pure joy.
Full on. I was like, looked at my friend Wes. I was like, he said Mr. Brown.
Did you hear that?
He has so much respect for him, and he's such a good actor. Beyond. I was so excited about that whole thing. I think Andre Brower should just, like, win every Emmy. Like, legit, like, best TV show, Andre Brower. Like, that's just straight up, like, best costumes, Andre Brower. Always.
Best cinematography in a dramatic film.
Yeah, Andre Brower. All the way across the board.
So I wanted to nitpick something with you, because I think I tweeted it. You tweeted something, and I tweeted back at you about how rushed the whole thing felt. Mm. Like, it was like 2.5 hours of ads and then like 30 minutes of content.
Right?
Even when they were like announcing the nominees, it was like Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, blah, 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 blah. No, like,
because
like
they pre-recorded it too. They didn't even have the, like, what do you call them? The, not announcers, but the people who came out to give the awards. They didn't have them read them live.
No, they were pre-recorded. And they were so fast.
Yeah. It was, like, honestly, like, CBS thought, this is our 3 hours of advertisements.
Yeah.
And then we'll squeeze whatever in between. And I had said something, I think you said this after I had pointed out the thing about how, like, they'd played off the cast of something to the Cheers theme song so that they could play the Cheers theme song in a commercial for Audi afterwards. And I'm like, bro. Come on.
And then Ted Danson was in, like, another commercial for something
else. Yeah, Ted Danson was in one as well. Like, okay. I mean, I love Cheers as much as the next guy, but come on. This is too much. Although I guess it's probably because he's on The Good Place or whatever. But yeah, I'm with you. It didn't really feel like the show was the priority.
Yeah. It just felt so like fast. They gave everyone like 30 seconds for their acceptance speeches.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it just felt like everything was just going too quick, which is, I mean, that's a sidebar. It's whatever. They need to make money. Another commercial for 10 minutes.
Yeah, it felt, I don't know, the whole thing felt thrown together, too. You know, like, the jokes weren't that good. They didn't land super well. Colbert is a funny guy, but it was basically dad joke theater. So,
yeah.
Meh. I watched these things for the Twitter snark. But
Broadway random...
Oh, Rachel Bloom.
That felt really random.
Yeah, it was. And like...
And it wasn't
funny.
She's
great. And I get what they were trying to do there, because the Ernst & Young people, like, is a stupid thing they have to do with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
But it didn't... It fell flat.
Yeah.
Everything just felt so flat in this whole thing. And, I mean, that was reflected, I guess. This was, like, the least watched Emmys in years. So people must have been turning it off or whatever. Although I don't even know how they count that at this point, because Nielsen ratings are like not a thing. And
yeah, I don't know. Whatever. I don't know anything of that world.
Yeah, like, who knows how this works? I have a friend who's writing her dissertation on these rating things. I'll ask her about it.
Perfect.
See what it is. But it was not well watched, if you will. And yeah, you can see why. It was kind of boring. And I need to watch it because FOMO, but that's about it.
Well, and I think it goes back to, like, they had all this fluff filler stuff.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, trying to hammer home all of this, like, inclusivity and diversity. Yeah. And had they just cut out that crap and, like, actually let those people talk and tell their story.
Right.
Maybe, like, that would have gotten where you wanted to go, where you wanted to be. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And that's a great point, especially because I think it was Reese Witherspoon who said something. It was somebody from Big Little Lies had said something about, you know, letting women tell their own stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of, that's the thing, is like what they were doing was talking about diversity the whole time and like trying to throw at us, like, look at how diverse this is, instead of being like, let's let our diverse people speak for themselves.
Yeah.
And, like, then you can see how this works. So I think you're kind of dead on in that. It's that they were showing, or telling, not showing. Showing, not telling.
Telling, not showing, yeah.
Telling, not showing. That's the phrase I was going for. It's reaching back into my, like, old school theater days.
There you go.
Coming out. But, yeah, I think that's exactly what it was. So, I don't know. That's pretty much all the takes I have. Anything else any other thoughts you have on the Emmys that you want to get out?
Donald Glover's tux was on point.
Ugh, there were so many good tuxes. I mean, come on. Dudes were wearing the hell out of those things. Riz Ahmed.
Yeah, his tux was nice.
Boy. Yeah, it was delightful. And I will say, if we're going to talk about, like, just briefly, the favorite of the night, Nicole Kidman's dress was absolutely my favorite.
Yeah, she rocked that. She looked good.
Ugh, brilliant. I love it. And then all the Stranger Things kids.
They were super good.
All right. Well, then, thank you, Sean.
Yeah, of course.
For coming along, chatting. Hopefully, we'll see more of you on the Overthink.
Yeah. I got to think of something to overthink about.
That should be really difficult. So for this special episode, I'm Corrigan Vaughn. This has been Sean Thompson. And we will see you all on the flip side. Peace
later.
Out.
Bye.